Welcome to the online ministry of Pacific Beach United Methodist Church, located in beautiful San Diego, California. Pacific Beach UMC is a member of the Reconciling Ministries Network and welcomes persons of all ages and backgrounds for worship, study, and service opportunities. More information can be found on our website at pbumc.org. May you be enriched in the hearing of these words, and may you receive and enjoy God's blessing.
Over the course of these next several weeks, we're going to be exploring, I mentioned this before, sort of using as a parallel Matt Rawls' book, The Redemption of Scrooge. We'll be sort of looking at this story of Dickens' A Christmas Carol and how it might inform our faith as we continue to prepare ourselves for Emmanuel, God with us, as we prepare ourselves for Christmas. One of the things that Matt Rawls does, he's got a series of books that are what he says is connecting Christ and culture, where he takes these secular songs or stories and draws a parallel to our faith. I especially engage with that idea. My focus in my master's program in seminary was the theology of secular music. I think if we tell ourselves that God only speaks in rooms like this, then we're going to miss a lot of what God has to say. But if we open our minds to the idea that God is always speaking in all places, then I think we can come to a greater sense of understanding and clarity about what God might be saying to us. And so this is my hope as we move forward into this series on the redemption of Scrooge. If you receive our weekly email or if you've been on our website to see our sermon previews, I invite you to check those out. The preview for today's sermon offers some guidance on some scriptures to perhaps read throughout this coming week as sort of some devotion. If you want to pick up Rawls' book, The Redemption of Scrooge, I've also nailed down a few sort of sub-chapters to sort of, again, use as a daily devotion so you don't have to, you know, read the whole book in one setting if you don't want to. But if that's something that would enhance your experience of preparation for Advent, you're invited to do that. If you don't get our weekly email, you can find it on our website, pbumc.org. And don't forget about all the other things that we have going on this Advent season. Tonight, we have our Advent kickoff. We have our lighting of our Christmas tree, and we'll sing some carols, and we'll do some Advent crafts. And, like all good Methodists, we'll have a potluck. So you're certainly welcome. The crafts start at 4, the potluck starts at 5. Come to any and all of that. You're certainly invited. I have a confession to share with you when it comes to my own way of preparing for Christmas. And I confess that I think that I have a tendency to be a little bit curmudgeon-y about it. I don't know if old-fashioned is the word or just curmudgeon-y or maybe persnickety. I'm not sure. But that's sort of my tendency. I have some friends who begin listening to Christmas music in October. That's not okay. We got to have Thanksgiving first. And it's rubbed off on my children. My youngest son, my 7-year-old, Zachary, and I, we were in the grocery store right up here across the street. We're in the Vons right up here. We walked into the grocery store to pick up some last-minute things before Thanksgiving. And all of a sudden, he puts down the thing that he picked up off the shelf, because he picks up everything on every shelf. He puts down the thing that he picked up off the shelf, and he points and he says, "Unacceptable." Because somebody put up a Christmas tree and it was still before Thanksgiving. Now, I confess that I probably put a little bit of that on him. But I feel that way. When you go into the grocery store, when you go into any of the shopping centers, you go there and there's all these Christmas decorations and it's not even, you know, it's still early November. It's not okay. Now, I'm not trying to, you know, there are the news media outlets who talk about a war on Christmas. I'm not trying to do any of that. Because it's not Christmas yet. It's Advent. A friend of mine, a Christian author named Diana Butler Bash, she put an article in, I want to say Huffington Post, I'm not 100%, but this was several years ago, and her article was, there is no war on Christmas, but there might be a war on Advent. Because we got to do Advent. We have to prepare ourselves for Jesus. We have to prepare ourselves for the coming of the Christ. We have to be ready for Emmanuel, God with us. It takes time and energy, and it's critical that we prepare ourselves. Because sometimes, like me, we get a little curmudgeon-y. Sometimes, like me, we get a little grumpy, a little persnickety. And we need this time. I know I need this time to prepare my heart and my mind for the incarnation, for the presence of Jesus. And for me, the idea that God came to earth as Emmanuel is critically important to our faith. Scholars will say that there are sort of three ways that we can talk about Jesus on earth. And we can talk about Jesus' incarnation or presence. We can talk about Jesus' death and crucifixion. And we can talk about Jesus' resurrection. And I know folks who say, well, that crucifixion part, that death part, dying for my sins. There's a whole theological point I could make about that. That's for another time. But the whole crucifixion part is the most important to them. Other people say that the resurrection part is most important to them. And there are some of us who say that the incarnation, the presence of Christ with us, the presence of God with us in the first place, leaving aside the rest, is the most important. For me personally, I go back and forth between presence and resurrection. Right? The crucifixion part, I'm not saying it's not important. I'm saying for me, it's less important than the other two. Doesn't have to be that way for you, but that's how it is for me. And so as we get up toward Christmas, I have to get ready. I have to prepare myself. I have to prepare my heart and my mind and my soul for Emmanuel, God with us, the birth of the Christ child. And I don't always do a good job. Now, for me, Christmas preparations are allowed to happen after Thanksgiving. And so, sort of as a part of that, well, if you were here last week and now you're here today, look around the room. It's different. There were some people who were here yesterday doing a ton of work to do all of this decorating, all the trees and the ornaments and the banners. Just a quick shout-out to the folks who were here. Of course, Ron and Lewis were both here for hours. Rick Cook and Scott Caprio were here. Dick Versteeg was here. Malia Sandstrom was here. Beth and I were here, along with our boys Cameron and Zach. And all this work, this was a lot of work, and it shows, doesn't it? And for me, thank you, I appreciate that. It's important that we thank the people that did this good work. For me, it's good to sort of help get into some of this Christmas spirit, to begin doing some of the decorating and things. And, you know, in our neighborhood, there were people who started putting up lights on their houses, getting the Christmas spirit. I tried not to say mean things about the people who put up their lights before Thanksgiving. I tried not to. But if you need a little help getting in the spirit, come this afternoon, 4 o'clock for crafts, 5 o'clock for potluck. We're going to stand, as long as it's not raining on us, we're going to stand outside this gigantic Christmas tree that people have spent 2 weeks putting lights on. It's going to be awesome. We're going to sing some Christmas carols. It's going to be great. Here's how part of it went for me yesterday. And I confess that during part of it, I wondered if Lewis was mad at me for giving me this job, because he asked me to assemble this stuff here. Now, I have seen these in people's yards before. You know, the reindeer, and it's nice, and it's sort of, you know, you can see through it, and it's sort of wireframe, and it's got the lights in it. It's really pretty. I will never, ever, ever buy one of these. Ever. Ever. The reindeer itself comes in 11 pieces. And they're separate, but not separate. Right, it's this divine mystery of separate and together. I don't understand it, but it's like they're all separate pieces. But then the electrical wire that lights the lights, so that way you have the opportunity to get them tangled up. And so then you try to put them together. But if you'd never done this before, if you don't know what you're doing, that would be me. Then you get it and you think you've got it together and you stand it up and it falls over and everything falls apart right away. And that happened to me twice. And then the sled, now the sled comes, I can't remember, it's 7 pieces just for the little sled. That are the same way. You put it together and then you let it stand for a second because you got to fix the reindeer after it fell over, and then the sled falls over. Again, twice. And so I was a little bit grumpy. Until Lewis. Until Lewis came and saved me. But, you know, maybe you've had that experience too. When it comes to, like, maybe when you put lights on your house, maybe you're like the Griswolds. Maybe you're, you know, blowing circuits and getting grumpy, whatever. But there comes a time in it too, doesn't it? Doesn't there come a time where like, oh, I, maybe I sort of start to feel myself getting into the Spirit. And maybe it comes after somebody comes to save you with putting together the reindeer and the sleigh. Or maybe you get to it on your own. Maybe you don't need the help like I sometimes do. Or maybe it's some other part of your life where you get grumpy about things. And maybe it's, in hindsight, not worth getting grumpy about. But you have a perspective of the world or a perspective of, you know, the way things ought to be. And especially if you feel sort of alone in that perspective, you can get, well, maybe angry. Maybe bitter. Maybe you are even called a Scrooge, whether it's Christmas time or not. And I think there's a lot we have to learn from the character Ebenezer Scrooge. And I'd like to show a quick video clip. This is from, I think it's the 2006 is the year that it came out. The Disney version with Jim Carrey playing half the parts in the movie. This is just a quick video clip that'll sort of help us set the stage for Scrooge. For those who are going to be listening online, we're recording this worship service online. For those who are going to listen online, we're not going to put the audio from this clip because we don't have the license to broadcast that. But folks can find it iTunes and various other places. But this is just a short clip with Scrooge entertaining in briefly his nephew and the little conversation that they have in Scrooge's shop.
Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Humbug.
Christmas humbug? Uncle, you don't mean that.
Merry Christmas. What reason have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
What right have you to be so dismal? You're rich enough.
Humbug!
Don't be cross, Uncle.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year older and not a penny richer? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled in his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Uncle!
Nephew! Keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone then.
Scrooge has a particular outlook on the world, that the only way to get ahead is to work hard and earn as much money as you can. And that's the way to be successful in the world. And that's not God's economy. Number one, I'd say God's probably less worried about dollars and cents and more worried about the way that we treat each other. Because we've gotten ourselves, and Scrooge is a good illustration of this, we've gotten ourselves into the idea that there's sort of a tit-for-tat exchange. There's sort of a, if I do this, then I get that. And we look at that in terms of our economy, but we also look at it in terms of our faith. If I do enough good work, then God will love me. If I treat people the right way, then God will say I'm okay. If I do, you know, these 10 special magic rules, then I will get to heaven. That's not the way it works. That's not God's economy. So what is God's economy? I'd like to read from you out of the Gospel of Matthew, the 20th chapter, the first 16 verses. This is a parable that Jesus tells as he teaches. The parable you may have heard is the workers in the vineyard. And I tell you that when I have read this parable, it seems unfair. But it seems unfair in that earthly economy rather than God's economy kind of way. Here's this parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. After he agreed with the workers to pay them a denarian, it's about a day's wage, a denarian, he sent them into his vineyard. Then he went out around 9 in the morning and saw others standing around the marketplace doing nothing. He said to him, "You also go into the vineyard, and I'll pay you whatever's right." And they went. Again around noon, and then around 3 in the afternoon, he did the same thing. Around 5 in the afternoon, he went and found others standing around. And he said to him, "Why are you just standing around here doing nothing all day long?" "Because nobody's hired us," they replied. He responded, you also go into the vineyard. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, call the workers and give them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and moving on finally to the first. When those who were hired at 5 in the afternoon came, each one received a denarian. Now, when those hired first came, they thought they'd receive more, but each of them also received a denarian. When they received it, they grumbled against the landowner. These who were hired last worked 1 hour, and they received the same pay as we did, even though we had to work the whole day in the hot sun. But he replied to one of them, friend, I did you no wrong. Didn't I agree to pay you a denarian? Take what belongs to you and go. I want to give to this one who was hired last the same as I gave to you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with what belongs to me? Or are you resentful because I'm generous? So those who are last will be first, and those who are first will be last. We have to get ourselves out of the cultural idea of if I do A, then I get B. Sure, maybe that works in our cultural systems. If I work this many hours, then I will get paid this much. Maybe that works in our cultural systems, and we've sort of agreed to that, so maybe it's right to expect that. But is it right to limit God to our cultural systems? If I love God, then God will love me. Does it work that way? Or does God reach out? In our Methodist tradition, we talk about it like prevenient grace. Does God love us whether or not we even acknowledge God? Does God love us whether or not we do things for others? Does God love us whether or not we show up in church? I suggest that God does. Now, that doesn't mean you all have permission to skip the next few weeks of church, because I submit that we experience God's love more fully when we choose to gather together. I submit that we experience God's love more fully when we choose to treat our neighbors and our friends with the same love and compassion that God has offered to us. I submit that when we choose to accept God's divine and powerful love, that we almost can't not share it. That when we are transformed by God's amazing and powerful love, we almost can't help giving that same love away. When we are transformed, we see the world and we treat the world in a different way. Now, if you've been coming to church since you were knee-high to a grasshopper, that doesn't mean you deserve God's love any more than somebody who's 96 and coming to church for the first time. You know, in the ancient Christian tradition, there's an emperor, fourth century emperor named Constantine, Roman emperor, who, the way a lot of folks talk about it, he had this conversion experience on his deathbed. Academics would say it's a little different than that. He was writing letters in affirmation of Christians around age 40, but wasn't baptized until he was very near death. And there are some who have critiqued Constantine, saying, he didn't convert till later, he shouldn't go to heaven. But all flesh will see the salvation of God. I'd like to offer an invitation to you as you look towards these coming weeks, as you prepare your heart and your mind for Emmanuel, God with us. My invitation to you is this: treat everybody you meet with that same kind of grace and love that's been offered to you. Treat every person that you come into contact with that same kind of compassion and love that has been offered to you, whether or not they deserve it. Because ask yourself, do you always deserve it? Treat the world the way God treats you. Even if somebody looks different, even if somebody thinks different, even if somebody likes Christmas music in October, even if somebody voted different from you in this last election, even if somebody says hurtful and harmful things, treat others with the same compassion and love that has been offered to you. In this way, we continue to embody Christ with us. Amen. Friends, I invite you to join me in a time of prayer as we lift up the prayers of this community. Holy and gracious Creator, God, who would be with us and in us, you hear us as we pray and we listen for your response. We lift up all these things and any that have been left unsaid as we join together in the prayer taught to us by our Christ, saying, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.